He was a revolutionary first and an economist second. He tried to show by economic reasoning that capitalism was based on exploitation, that it was unstable, and that it would lead to communism. Though he wrote many short works on economic themes, Marx pinned his hopes on his great masterwork, which would give a correct analysis of capitalism, while at the same time refuting all previous economic theories of capitalism. This work was eventually called Das Kapital in the original German, which is translated into English simply as Capital. The first volume appeared in 1867. Marx anticipated that it would make him famous and perhaps rich. For many years he had battled against illness and despondency to produce this, the first of four enormous volumes. But Volume 1 of Capital had a disappointing reception. It was considered too difficult and abstract. It sold only 1,000 copies in the first 4 years. Marx commented that his royalties did not pay for the cigars he smoked while writing it. Most of the reviews which appeared either were planted by Marx's friends or completely missed the point. One review warmly praised the book as a useful guide for capitalists in running their factories. One development which Marx did not expect was that the book was soon translated into Russian and began to attract real interest in Russia before it did so in any other country. Marx hated Russia and considered it backward, barbaric, and the greatest enemy of progress. The Russian government censorship committee permitted Capital to be distributed with the following comment.
The work is difficult and hardly comprehensible. Few will read it, and still fewer understand it. Although the political convictions of the author are completely socialist, and although the whole book is very definitely socialist in character, the book's style of presentation is not such as to make it open to all. And furthermore, it is written in a strictly scientific fashion. So, the committee declares this book to be immune from prosecution.
But the Russian edition sold better than any other, and copies were passed eagerly from hand to hand among the young Russian radicals, sometimes disguised between the covers of a New Testament. Despite this, Marx's Capital did not begin to become really well known anywhere until 20 years later. Today, over 100 years after its first publication, Capital has sold more copies than any other economics book in history. It has become the most revered scripture of the communist parties which rule almost half the world. And in every part of the world, radical dissidents devour it eagerly. Millions of people who have barely heard of Marx or Capital accept many of its arguments, notably the idea that profit comes from exploiting workers by paying them less than they produce, that competition automatically destroys itself by creating monopoly, and that just as a single firm is centrally directed, so the whole economy might one day be centrally directed. All these ideas existed before Marx, but it was Marx's writings, especially Capital, which led to the popular perception that these ideas had been scientifically demonstrated. Marx was born in 1818 in the town of Trier, in that region of Germany which had recently been part of Napoleon's empire. In his youth, Marx was a radical liberal democrat, and this got him into trouble with the police. He had become a communist by 1844 when he was 26. His ideas continued to evolve, but by 1847, when he co-authored the famous Communist Manifesto, many of Marx's characteristic ideas were set for the rest of his life. Marx's views were largely formed by conditions in Europe in the 1840s, and to the end of his life, his thinking reflected these conditions, despite the spectacular changes which took place in Europe from the 50s through the 80s. Europe in the 1840s was predominantly agricultural, as it had been for centuries. The majority of people were still tied to the land as peasant farmers. Some of these peasants were leaving the land and becoming factory workers, selling their services for wages, but this was still comparatively rare. In some places, notably in Manchester in the north of England, large numbers of laborers worked for wages in giant factories. Manchester in the 1840s was, like Los Angeles in the 1960s, a picture of the future. But to most people in Europe, the idea of working for a wage in a factory was as remote as living on the moon seems today. Even in some places where there were large masses of workers, such as Paris and London, a worker usually meant an artisan, a self-employed craftsman, or someone employed in a tiny workshop. The majority of people farmed the same land their fathers had farmed and acknowledged the same lord, the local aristocratic landowner. Hardly anywhere in the world was there a government which could be called democratic in the modern sense, and it did not seem likely that anything approaching democracy could possibly arrive in most European countries within a lifetime. In total population, the United States was only just drawing level with Britain. America was still essentially an outpost of Europe. Yet to those who looked carefully at European conditions, it was clear that the new industrial working class, while still small, was steadily growing and might eventually become the majority of the population. These new workers, sometimes called the proletariat, were unlike any earlier class of people. They lived mainly in towns and had no connection with the land. They changed jobs frequently, moving from one employer to another, from one region to another, and even from one occupation to another. They had no permanent stake in their jobs or communities, and they did not own any part of the equipment they used at work. They were sometimes employed to operate gigantic, noisy, frightening machines, the like of which the world had never seen. Yet the workers had no say in how these machines were used. Socially and politically, members of the proletariat were outcasts. They had no political representation or recognition. Although expanding rapidly, they were still fewer in number than the large population of domestic servants who catered to the wants of the well-to-do. Factory workers were considered servants under the authority of masters, but without the dignity or security of a maid, a butler, or a groom. They were often despised by the landowners and by their capitalist employers. They were often treated as insolently by the police as they were treated at work by the overseers. They worked from 12 to 18 hours a day, from infancy. Their work often injured them physically, and when they were too old or diseased to find employment, they sometimes faced complete destitution and further indignities at the hands of the authorities. Their food was adulterated, and their dwellings lacked what we would consider the most basic essentials of sanitation and comfort. They slept in their clothes, and many of them had never seen soap. They often drank large quantities of alcohol and fed their babies patent medicines containing opium to keep them quiet. Frequently, whole working-class communities were decimated by plagues of cholera, typhoid, or scarlet fever, while deaths from consumption were commonplace. The chances of a worker's children being able to go to college were zero, and their chances of being able to move up in society by any means were close to zero. In 1845, Marx's close friend Frederick Engels published his book The Condition of the Working Class in England, based partly on documentary records and partly on his own observations. It is filled with horrific descriptions, such as this one of a Manchester neighborhood.
In a rather deep hole, surrounded on all four sides by tall factories and high embankments, stand two groups of about 200 cottages, built chiefly back to back, in which live about 4,000 human beings, most of them Irish. The cottages are old, dirty, and of the smallest sort. The streets uneven, fallen into ruts, and in part without drains or pavement. Masses of refuse, offal, and sickening filth lie among standing pools in all directions. The atmosphere is poisoned by the effluvia from these, and darkened by the smoke of a dozen tall factory chimneys. A horde of ragged women and children swarm about here, as filthy as the swine that thrive upon the garbage heaps and in the puddles.